There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along. Another hour of live local talk. The phone and text hotline, 343-0106. Of course, the website, fmtalk1065.com. I haven't mentioned this week, but I'm solving that now because the reminder came up on my phone. Hey, votenappies.com. So it's nappy voting going on right now, and we sure appreciate y'all's votes for getting us in. Right, nominating us in these great categories in the media section. But now you got to get us across the finish line, and we appreciate that. If you'll go to votenappies.com, and you didn't have to vote in the nomination process, you can still go now to votenappies.com and for your favorite radio station and shows and hosts and combos and all that good stuff. There's a lot of categories where we are competing against ourselves. That's fine. Just find your favorite show at FM Talk 106.5 and give them the votes right there over at votenappies.com. All right, so big thank you on that. And also coming up in just a little bit, I will start tallying up the number of pictures. Now y'all are just starting trouble because it started before the show with people sending me pictures of them with the fuel cans. And I said, go top off your vehicles. But, you know, when you go and you're filling up fuel cans there, you know, like yesterday afternoon, like I saw, you're just motivating more people to fill up fuel cans, which is driving more people to fill up fuel cans, which is actually causing the gas shortage locally. So, I mean, easy on this, but we'll talk about that later on. All right. Last on the charts, but number one in our hearts, it's District 105 Representative Chip Brown joining us now on Midday Mobile. And good to hear from you.
Hey, thanks, Sean. It's great to be with you.
You topped off your tanks?
Yeah, last night, but I needed gas anyway, so it wasn't a, you know, my wife tends to run it all the way down to E almost, correct. So I had to go get her gas last night, and it actually wasn't, you know, I heard all these stories of lines and, where I usually get gas in Theodore, on Rangeline Road right there is, wasn't crowded at all, so.
No, now it's going to be crowded.
It might be now that I just said that.
They're all going there to get in line. So much to talk about after last week in Montgomery and looking at the last day coming up next week for Sonny Dye. Let's kind of break this down. I want to talk about we'll get to some big wins, I think, in this legislative session. But let's talk about things that were losses or they're still not for sure at this point. And number one on a lot of people's minds, even though I think prisons should be, but number one on most people's minds is the gambling bill and what happened here from what was brought in by Senator Marsh at the beginning of the session that went through its permutations there, then went to y'all in the House, and then, didn't have the votes.
Yeah, that was interesting how that played out, Sean. It was a lot of drama going on Thursday. Mm-hmm. That was for sure. It, you know, the bill, what had been, the Senate had passed when it was brought to the House. There were four bills originally that came down from the Senate, and then they were consolidated into three bills. And you had one that was the actual enforcement bill that set forth a gaming commission and penalties for violating different administrative acts and different rules and violating the law, and then it set forth definitions like what is a slot machine, that sort of thing. And that was one bill, that was House Bill 311, And then you had House Bill 309, which was the actual bill. And then you had House Bill 319, which was the constitutional amendment, which is what would be on the ballot, that language. And it was totally changed. When it came down from the Senate, you had a group of House members. I was not part of that group that worked on that bill and put together what was really not a bad bill. I mean, that was a pretty decent bill. It had some issues. It had one of the issues that I didn't like that was changed actually before the final version was dealing with scholarships. It had three different types of scholarships. One was a 4-year scholarship that was open to everyone and was an after the fact scholarship. So I like this provision, and what this did is when you graduated, if you agreed to stay in Alabama and work in Alabama, then you would get money back to pay off what you spent on 4 years of college. And that's good because what they found in Georgia in particular that, you know, they front end load all that money. And so you go to college, you have a B average, they give you this money to go to college. But what happens is kids will drop out, they'll flunk out, and then that money's gone to waste, or they get a 4-year degree and then they move to New York. And mm-hmm. so they're not reinvesting in the state of Georgia. So we didn't want that to happen. So that was in there. There was a small percentage that went to first-generation college students and 100% Pell Grant recipients. Very small. And then there was another provision to dealing with junior colleges that had you had to qualify for federal financial aid Pell Grants as a last resort. And so a lot of us didn't like that provision, and we were able to get that changed where it was really open to everyone, and which it should be, because we're all, I mean, you know, the middle class is the one that bears the burden on that, really. There's not programs for the middle class kids to go to college. So that we had a pretty decent bill. I mean, you know, I think the sentiment was there to let the people vote on it, but it just kind of fell apart. Well, you know, one of the biggest things was what tends to happen is the Democrats will say they're on board, and then when it comes to the final, you know, last minute to get it on the floor, they'll pull out and make demands of different things that they want, and that basically drove the train off the tracks.
Yeah, but thinking about this, inside the body, those things drive the train off the tracks. But from the outside looking in, number one, I think you and I walked down the street and asked people if it was the issue of a breakdown of how much for scholarship versus the people are they don't know, and I don't think they care. They look from the outside and say,
yeah.
I mean, there's some people who are against gambling no matter what, okay? That's a group, and there are people that are for gambling no matter what. Then in the middle, where the interesting part is to me, is people that are moving their support or not support. They would support lottery, but they got questions about casinos or sports betting or whatever, vice versa. But people say they can't get this done. They can't get something that has an approval rate like lottery done. They can't get, you know, and then this group over here says, well, I wish they would get it done, but this system they're laying out is not competitive. It rewards, you know, well, the Porch Bandit Creek Indians, but also what people will say is illegal gambling that's been going on in the state, and they're going to be rewarded and cut in on the deal. It's not about the breakdown. I mean, maybe it should be, but it's not about the breakdown for money allocation. It's about what they think is a rigged deal for certain bodies in the state.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, one of the things people don't realize, too, is that, you know, actually right now there's 18 legal, semi-legal,
semi-legal
gambling operations running in the state of Alabama. You get over into Greene County and you have, you know, multiple facilities in Greene County. Then you've got mm-hmm. Lowndes County. There's Macon County. Where's Jefferson County? It ends up there's 18 that they're the way they're done. They're regulated by local amendments, and they're overseen by the sheriff. The sheriff is the one that actually grants licenses and is in charge of enforcement and.
But it's against state law. Supreme Court has, you know, even the sheriff's. I mean, I'm not trying to be a pain here, but
the governor has to issue to sign an executive amendment to crack down on them. If you remember over the years, depending on who's been in the governor's seat, or who's the attorney general, they'll crack down on them, and then they won't crack down on them. They'll crack down on them, and right now the governor's not cracking down on them. And so that is one good thing, though. If we were able to do any type of comprehensive gaming reform, it would bring all that underneath some type of commission to regulate it. So I don't know. You know, we had an opportunity right at the end to pass a lottery bill. There was discussion on that, and we looked at the possibility of that, but it just wasn't able to come together in such a short period of time.
Let's talk real here. So you talk about a short period of time, but this is good. And if you're just joining us, talking to Representative Chip Brown about this, the lottery bill, people say, they call me and I have to go through the same thing, so I'm going to let you do it. Why can't y'all get just a lottery bill passed? It's not that they're in support for it. Y'all know there's public support for it. So why can't you get a standalone lottery bill passed? Who stands in the way of that?
Well, you know, 2 years ago, we had a clean lottery bill that came down and it lost in the House by one or two votes. And what happened that time, unfortunately, what happens in the legislature numerically, we do have a supermajority on the Republican side, but there's a certain number of Republicans that are always going to vote no on any type of gaming they vote. I mean, I had some Republicans vote against a bill that I had 2 years ago for Dolphin Island that created entertainment districts because it might possibly lead to more consumption of alcohol down the road. So
right. It's
you've got a certain element that are always going to vote no on every type of gaming, alcohol. It just doesn't matter, anything like that, they're going to vote no. So what you end up having to do is you have to have a certain amount of Democrats that would need to be for the bill. And
there
so
you go. That's what, it, right? That's it. You have to have Democrats have to be for the bill. And what it takes for them to be for the bill is not lottery.
And so what happened 2 years ago is the same thing that happened this time. You know, they were for it, and then right at the last minute for the lottery bill, they went and made all kinds of demands that we couldn't support and I couldn't support. And so the whole thing just collapses. It repeats itself over and over. You know, it's unfortunate, but it does.
Well, I mean,
I'd love to give the people the opportunity to vote on the lottery.
It's
a good bill, but that's another thing too, Sean. It's got to be a good bill. It's got to be, the money's got to go to, you know, good education, go to K-12, go to scholarships, what have you. But it's got to be a good bill. You just can't throw something out there. But end of the day, really what's driven it off the tracks both times were the other parties. So I would doubt anything is, the speaker is said the other day in Yellowhammer News that he doesn't foresee having a vote on the last day. And I don't think that we should have a vote on the last day, because then you're going to rush something through that could be problematic. So I think we're looking at next year.
So you do not believe,
or if the governor calls a special session, but
well,
she's saying she won't do that. So.
Well, and I wonder about that. And people need to understand, too. I guess we'll do a little civics here. If the governor would say, let's say, calls, okay, well, here's one we know is going to happen. So reapportionment. We know there's going to be a special on that in August, right? The information comes in. Could y'all in the legislature, setting you up for this, teach a lesson, could y'all in the legislature then talk gaming in that and move a gaming bill through?
No, if it's not germane to the subject. The governor has the ability to call a special session. She's the only one that could call a special session. I was asked that often during the coronavirus lockdown and then mask mandates and everything. But in Alabama, some states, the legislatures can call themselves back in. But in Alabama, the governor is the only person that can call the legislature in. And she sets the call of what the topic is going to be about. So if it's about reapportionment, only reapportionment can be brought up during that time. Now, you can do, let's say you did prison reform, which is a possibility, because if you've seen the governor's plans, the three banks that were going to finance her proposal have all pulled out.
Right.
So
right.
We're going to have to do something about prisons. So let's say if we had a special session on prisons, then if it was germane to the issue and the speaker felt it was germane and the lieutenant governor or president of the Senate felt that it was germane, then it could be brought up. Let's say you had something dealing with sentencing or like the bill that I just passed, the Anaya's Law, that deals with criminal bond reform. That could possibly be seen as being germane to prisons and fitting in with what it's about.
But, yeah, but there's...
reapportionment. It's just strictly reapportionment.
Yeah, and talk about this when we get back from the break, but that's an interesting nuance, too, to find out the final arbiter of how germane, the germanacy of an issue and how you can connect these things. We continue just a second. Representative Chip Brown, our guest. I get some questions here on the text line as well at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, Dalton, I'm actually looking at our radar loop in here and looking at that cell. We just got a update here. Thank you, Lisa. So in hail in Summerdale right now. I'm looking at that thunderstorm, too. Part of this bigger rain mass Dr. Bill has hanging on with us. Oh, well, off and on, rain through the weekend, really Thursday into Friday, and then things get pretty fantastic for the weekend. Get more from Dr. Bill coming up in just a second. Continue our discussion with Representative Chip Brown, talking about what's happened here at the end of session. And we just have a minute or two here before we get a news update. But in the attempt to let people understand how this whole thing works, the groups that are aligned against the gambling bill in Alabama are not all just people like me, maybe, that question, you know, whether it's a good allocation of resources. There's people that got a dog in the hunt, right?
Yeah, you know, it's people don't realize that, and you wouldn't. Only reason I know it is because I'm kind of got an inside view on some of this stuff. But the you know, a lot of it comes from outside game that states like Mississippi, let's say, that have gaming interests. There's groups in Mississippi that they might own casinos and. Or, you know, they have an interest in gambling in Mississippi and want to be the only one around. And so they send out texts and emails and to try to put pressure on people. And a lot of times they're misleading. They did the same thing. And if you remember, Sean, in 1999, it was the Choctaw Indians with the lottery vote. They were the ones funding the anti-lottery vote because they didn't want any competition with gambling in Mississippi. So it's... You know, people always have to think, give a thought of where did that possibly come from. You know, it's not always what it is, what it appears to be.
Yeah, and exactly. And you're going to hear, you know, there are people that oppose this. And we have about 30 seconds here. But there are people that can oppose it for different reasons. I might be on the say, well, I don't like this bill as it is because I'm worried about the competitive or lack thereof nature in it. And there's somebody else who's doing it for a moral reason or somebody else who's opposing it because it's going to get in their pocket. Right. I mean, there's a lot of different parts of this.
Oh, yeah, sure. Sure. And you know, it with me, it's not that I don't gamble at all. It's not my thing. I don't.
Mine neither.
But if it's the right bill, I think we haven't had an opportunity to vote since 1999. And I think people should have the opportunity to vote if it's a good bill.
There we go. Coming right back. More with Representative Chip Brown talking about, we really just talked to gaming, but there's a couple other things we want to get into and some wins in this legislative session. And one that we've talked about enough, a lot with Representative Brown over the months and then even last year, Anaya's Law, where that stands and what that means, when that might go into effect too, right? You pass a law, so when do you see the effects of it? We'll talk about that straight ahead.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 135 FM Talk 106.5. Dr. Bill's update there. So the rain continuing, thunderstorms continuing. I'm watching the radar. So that cell that was dropping hail, it looks like, in Summerdale is moved on a little bit east, it looks like, here of Somerdale, but there's more more the darker, like the red and the red-purple on the radar cells making their way into South Mobile County. So just keep your head on a swivel there, and we'll give you any updates. Flash flood watch in effect right now for Mobile and Baldwin counties. All right, continue our discussion with District 105 Representative Chip Brown, and talking about the session that has been. It's still not over, I guess, because a week from today, right, sine die.
That's right. Well, you know, the last day on the 17th, I think we're going to have some pretty big votes coming up that day. We should be looking at hopefully, potentially, votes on COVID vaccine passports, Second Amendment sanctuary state, and possibly, hopefully, transgender youth banning hormone treatments for transgender youth.
Yeah, when,
as well.
I mean, because sine die is not usually like that, right? Sine die is often like, I mean, not saying that y'all have field day, but I mean, it's not usually a hardcore legislative day.
No, and you know, it's we still haven't totally concurred and agreed on the general fund budget, but it's that we passed it in the House and it's in the Senate, and they just have to concur on it, so I'm sure we'll come to an agreement on that. But, you know, used to be, I worked for the Speaker of the House in the 90s up there for a few years, and used to be that the last day it would come down to the budgets. They would use that as bargaining chips throughout the session to get to sway people to vote different ways, and we don't do that anymore. That's fortunately, I think that's a bad way to do business. But that doesn't happen anymore. But used to in the old days, they would actually, because it says you have to sine die, you have to end the session before the end of midnight on the 30th calendar day, and 30 legislative day, I'm sorry. And used to, they would stop the clock, actually go up there and unplug the clock at about 5 minutes to midnight, and it would just sit there, and it might be 4 a.m. the next day, and then they'd plug the clock back in.
Y'all, that's called Goat Hill time, y'all. You got Eastern, Central, Mountain, Pacific, and Goat Hill time.
Yeah, but we're going to be doing some heavy lifting. I would predict we'll be there till midnight Tuesday working on getting some big issues through.
Okay, well, one of those, at least in my mind, and I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm a fool, because for the last 4 or 5 years, I have been focused. Heck, it was during the first term of former Governor Bentley, I've been focused on the issue with Alabama prisons. And I've heard from the original reports coming in, what the danger of receivership was, what needed to be done. And I've watched nothing happen, right, until this session. Here goes the executive branch moving forward with this plan. And that gets derailed because of, you know, social justice, which, by the way, was inaccurate. Not a private prison that we're talking about, a privately built but not run prison. But funding goes away. Now you have this plan that all this time was spent on and no funding mechanism there. Are y'all going to vote on a bond? Can y'all get that done on the last day?
It's possible. It's possible because there is a bill. That, you know, this discussion actually stretches back into the fall. When the governor came forward with her plan, and we developed a alternative plan, let's say. And so there actually is a bill ready to go to be substituted and is in place to, that we could potentially pass a bond issue on the last day to fund the prisons. Now, is it more likely that we come back in a special session to deal with the situation? Yes, but it is possible. We do have a bill ready to do that, to provide a bond issue, which that's what I prefer, because the other plan, the governor's plan, let me tell you this way, Sean. I applaud her for stepping out and trying to do something, because that's something that previous governors have kicked the can down the road for years. And she stepped up to do something. I don't like the plan, but at least she tried to do something. But the problem with her plan all along to me is they're private prisons, that they're on land that isn't currently state land, and we have to buy the land. We have to you know, the prisons, at the end of the day, we don't have ownership of the facilities. Whereas if we do a bond issue, that would be on current sites where we own the land adjacent to where we have a, you know, solid workforce in these areas. And it would give us the money to repair our old facilities and build new facilities. And that makes more, a business standpoint, that makes more sense to me.
Yeah, and I like that too. But you said something important, and that was, at least you did something. Because I've watched this go through session after session in Montgomery, and nothing has happened. I'm one that has questioned the overreach of the executive branch through this whole session. But in this, I kind of said, well, at least something was done, and maybe it moved something forward. Here's my worry, that the plans there, the RFP or whatever that was drawn up, that Governor had tweeted that picture where she was sitting with the stack, you know, stacks 2 feet high of papers she'd signed off on. If y'all go through and you got this plan ready to go, does that include drawings and build out and takeoffs on cost? And I mean, can you get that done? Can you pass something out? Can y'all in the House get something passed, get the Senate to sign off, get the governor to sign off on it in time that it gets in front of Judge Thompson and we don't go into receivership? Can that be done?
I don't know, Sean. That's that's the big unknown, and that's one of the criticisms that the governor has had of trying to do a bond issue, is that it would prolong the situation. Because you do have to go through those hoops, like you just stated, and so that is the negative side of it. But really, I think we don't have an alternative now. I mean, your funding mechanisms for her plan are gone; mm-hmm. They're not there anymore. The banks, the three banks that were going to back up the plan, have all pulled out. So there's no, I don't see a path forward for her plan. So we're going to have to go down the road of doing a bond issue. And we do that, it probably will prolong it a little bit. But I would think, too, though, you know, by doing that, that also shows the courts that we are doing something. That should be taken into consideration. I would think it would be.
Yeah, and that's what I wonder. Is that something that Judge Thompson looks at and goes, okay, well, that's acceptable because of, you know, because something out of the control, you know, the fact that the funding fell apart, that was out of their control. So I'm going to give you another six months, whatever, before bringing the hammer down.
I mean, I think that would be taken into consideration. I know I was part of some of the meetings with some of the Justice Department folks from D.C., and that was one of the things they would say, is that they need to see that we're moving in that direction. We're moving to create a solution to the overcrowding problem in our prisons. And you know, I think by doing it this way, even though it would prolong it a little bit, we are showing that we're acting in good faith, that we want to, you know, fix the situation and reduce the overcrowding in our prisons. And they are overcrowded. They're massively overcrowded. But it's like what I said, I do applaud her for showing leadership and stepping out, and I don't agree with the plan, but at least she did something. I mean, in politics, it's very easy. They're a dime a dozen to find people that don't want to act, that don't want to act on anything controversial, because it's easier to just slide by and not get noticed. But it takes character, it takes courage to step forward and put forth a plan and you know, and say, we're going to do this. We're going to try something.
That's We'll be watching. We'll be watching that. I guess some of this question will be answered a week from now, right?
Oh, it'll shake out fast and furious on Tuesday, that's for sure.
Let's talk about the subject we've talked about this session a couple of times. We talked about last year, too, and that is Anaya's Law, the success of the votes for Anaya's Law. When do we see this put in? When does this make it to district attorney's office and judges in Mobile County or Jefferson County or Elmore County, everywhere? When does this happen?
Well, it's a constitutional amendment. And, of course, we remember Anaya's Law is constitutional bond reform. And what that is, it says that currently under Alabama law, the only time you can hold someone without bond is if they're charged with capital murder. And what this does is it broadens that category to include all violent Class A felonies, you know, rape, kidnapping, murder, burglary, violent domestic assault, terrorism, and some others. But it would allow a prosecutor to go to a judge and request that an individual be held without bond if they're considered an imminent threat to the community themselves or a flight risk. And the judge would hear the case and present evidence and show why they should be held without bond. And that fits in with the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution. And when we crafted this, we did something that was done in a way that was looking towards any type of court challenge that will come after it passes. And so we feel good about that. But it passed the House unanimously and then passed the Senate unanimously, had bipartisan support, went to the governor, and now it'll be on the ballot for the people to vote on in November of 2022.
And that is, it has to go through that before it would be implemented. So we have to go another cycle because last year it didn't happen, didn't get through. So we're still looking at 2022 before this is implemented.
Yeah, if we wouldn't have had the COVID situation last year, it was in position to pass the Senate. It was supposed to be on the floor. The Thursday we were supposed to come back and the session was cut short because of COVID. So if that would have happened, we would have had it on the ballot this last November. So now we've got to wait till November 2022. I'm already out there campaigning for it. I think it is a bill that district attorneys, law enforcement, judges, they say it will save lives. It will save the lives of people in Alabama and will prevent killings and tragedies like what happened to Anaya Blanchard, who this bill is named after. We see that often. I mean, it happens, and it's one thing that's not just isolated to some particular part of Alabama. It happens in Mobile. It happens in Huntsville, Montgomery, all across the state. People are violent criminals, and the judge would like to hold them, but he can't, and they're released, and then they go out and create some heinous crime. They commit some terrible crime against our fellow citizens, and this bill will allow them to stay behind bars pending trial. It should save lives.
As we wrap here, your vote on the medical marijuana bill and your thoughts there, how did you vote?
I voted yes. I did vote yes. That's one of those things a lot of people say, it's a gateway to, we're going to end up like Colorado and it's going to be all over the place. And I don't agree with that. If you look at that bill, Sean, that bill, the prescriptions are done in pill form, creams or drops. Mm-hmm. And the ailments are so limited in the steps that a person has to go through to get the medical marijuana. It's a pretty tough thing to do. And I just had too many people, either in my personal life that I've known or phone calls of people that had children that had 100 seizures a day, that people that had grandmothers that had cancer and couldn't keep food down and, or the nausea and it's a quality of life issue. I mean, it's a compassion issue. And so that's the way I voted. I voted to, what I think is the compassionate and right thing to do as a state representative.
I think I for one support that vote. So good job on that one. We'll talk again soon. And I know that, as you said, not exactly sure what it's going to be, but it's not going to be a quiet last day of session next week. Right. Fair enough.
That's right. I put my body armor on. I'm ready to go into the fray.
All right. Well, we'll be talking to you through that process and afterwards and see what gets done. And then, of course, we have a summer of special session discussion to do. So, as always, we appreciate your time. Can't wait to get you back on. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it. Have a good week.
You too. Representative Chip Brown, our guest, and we're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile on the international front. Are you watching what's going on in Israel with these Hamas rockets hitting? Wow.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, Just getting the latest in here as there's just more information coming in out of half a world away in Israel. Jerusalem Post reporting one dead. I think it's now two. Didn't the update two dead now? And many injured, more than a dozen injured. 700 rockets have been fired at Israel since yesterday. 700. And if you'll see on the Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5, retweeted a couple tweets from Breaking 911, people that had on-site cell phone video of this. These are like hitting in their entertainment district and in the city. They had a bus hit as well. 700 of these Hamas rockets coming in. It said Hamas has now said they would fire more missiles into Tel Aviv if the IDF continued to strike buildings in the Gaza Strip. So this is going on right now. And by the way, what's happening back here at home on this one? Fox News story came out 10 minutes ago. Brandon Gillespie said Representative Rashida Tlaib, you know the squad, y'all, claimed yesterday with no pushback from MSNBC that the Israeli government is guilty of, quote, promoting racism and dehumanization, end quote, under an, quote, apartheid system, end quote, that discriminates against Palestinians. A member of the far-left squad made the claim while appearing alongside the liberal network's Ayman Mohelden? I think Ayman Mohelden, to give her reaction to the violence unfolding across Israel. Tlaib also compared the plight of Palestinians to black people in the United States facing police brutality. Mohelden began the discussion by asking Tlaib for her reaction to the developments taking place across Israel in reference to the increased tensions in Jerusalem and exchanges between Hamas and Israeli forces over the last few weeks. Tlaib says this is an apartheid system. Israel's own prominent human rights organization, B'Tselem, has declared it so. Human Rights Watch has declared it. And Palestinians on the ground have been telling us for decades their homes have been demolished, that they have been targeted, that violence have been met by Israeli-led forces under Netanyahu's racist policies, end quote. She went on to claim, without providing evidence, that the message the U.S. is sending to Palestinians fighting against the apartheid system is the same message being told to black Americans fighting against police brutality, which is there is no form of acceptable resistance to state violence. So I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I'd be surprised if Tlaib did not say that, because she's Palestinian-American, right? This has been her thing since she's been elected. So it's interesting to see how much of this is maybe a test. Is it specific to Israeli policies and Netanyahu, or is it also a test for the commander in chief, President Biden? If you watch the feed coming from over there, there are rockets coming one after another. I mean, 700 so far there. So we'll keep our eyes on this story and get you more on that. All right, a couple texts here before we wrap up and let Paul Feinbaum take over. Let's see. Tim, I'm totally against gambling. I will not support a bill that I'll always vote no. But if they're going to get this thing, they need to spend a whole lot of time nailing down what they're going to do with this money, making sure it's a foolproof plan so they cannot get their sticky fingers on it later and spend it for other things than it was never intended for. Let's see. So Grant says, amen, I'm a seizure patient. The meds they want me to take, no, sir. Side effects was like suicide, aggression, etc. No, I'll smoke a half a joint and be cool. For side effects they gave me for the medicine is 4 pages long. For real, I'll show you. The medical marijuana bill, you could debate the medical marijuana bill, but it is not an honest argument when you say, well, that's going to have, you know, medical marijuana bill equals recreational. Now, I'm an honest dude, so I told y'all, I mean, in states where they have gone to recreational marijuana, quite often they had medical marijuana as the first thing they passed, and then some years later they passed recreational. But the bill itself, those are trying to tell you that the bill itself all of a sudden becomes recreational marijuana, it's just not true. Now, can the state legislature at some point in the future take up another bill for recreational marijuana and pass it? It's impossible. But sit back for a second. Do you think there's a great chance that the state of Alabama anytime soon is going to pass a recreational marijuana bill? Right. The answer is no. So medicinal marijuana bill can't on its own just morph into a recreational marijuana bill. Now, you can still disagree with it, but let's keep it on the facts here. All right. Remember, check us out online, fmtalk1065.com, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We got podcasts, 54 hours a week of live local shows waiting for you. Everything from, well, this show to gardening and everything in between. You can check it out on our website or through your favorite service, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, all those. Paul Feinbaum Show. Get started next.